Hello, everybody. Welcome to Three Bean Salad. We've got a little bit we'd like to do before the episode, because since recording this episode, we had some very terrible news, which many of you will be aware of, which is that our friend and fellow comedian Gareth Richards died tragically in a car accident. And we wanted to just have a little moment just to acknowledge that and to send our love to his family, and just to do a little dedication, if you don't mind. Some of you may have come across his work. No doubt there'll be fans among the listeners. But he was a wonderful, wonderful, lovely, lovely, gentle, delightful man and a brilliant comic. You even did a show with him, didn't you, Henry, back in the day?
I did indeed. Time ago. I did. I did a show in Edinburgh with Gareth in 2010, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And it was...
It was a sweet piece of comedy.
It's a sweet piece of comedy. And as you say, absolutely, Gareth was an absolutely lovely, lovely person. Yeah, it's just unspeakably sad news about Gareth. Did you gig with him, Ben?
Yeah, when I started comedy, we seemed to be at the same gigs quite a lot. I was thinking about this, like when you start comedy, it's quite nerve-wracking, really. And if I saw that he was there as well, I'd be like, oh, thank God, because he was just very nice and just a very lovely, lovely man. Even if you were crap, which I often was, he was very sort of kind to you. And so I was thinking about that this week, that he was just a lovely person to know.
Oh, yes. I definitely did gigs when I died on my hole in the presence of Gareth. It never felt bad in the presence of Gareth, even though he would then go on to have a humdinger. If you don't know his comedy, his website is still up, of course, which is garethrichards.net. You could even buy his beautiful, beautiful EP, which is called These Songs Could Be Used in Adverts. We just wanted to dedicate this episode to him and send out love into the ether.
Yes. And our thoughts are very much with his family.
Very much so.
Yep, absolutely.
Thank you for that. Thank you for indulging us in that. And farewell, Gareth. Lovely Gareth.
Ben's doing his little world weary look he gives me sometimes.
I keep getting asked by my thing if it wants to change. Okay, I'm hoping I'm going to be all right. I keep getting asked by the software if it can change the something to do with the headphones. I don't know.
Ben, can we do our we've done this once before, but can we now do our annual tech sort of catch up with you?
The help desk.
It's sort of. There's an element of help desk, but also it's you essentially give the... It's a bit like... It's sort of like our own internal tech Oscars, where you basically say, who is currently better at tech, me or Mike?
Well, hang on, right? Well, today's first day of... I've got two creamy new leads happening, so I should be coming through loud and creamy.
This is the worst possible day I could have chosen to do this.
I thought I could hear a new lead.
Yeah.
Oh, Dan, there is a creaminess coming at me in both ears from you, Mike.
Yeah.
Henry, for the third year running, you have won Tech Dunce. Put on the hat.
So I can just, well, I've had it soldered on now, so I can just keep it on. It's almost worse for me if I lose the dunce hat now that it's soldered on. I've got no real incentive to change things.
You know the dunce hat as an idea? It's quite a well-established sort of trope, but...
I'm assuming it's unfashionable these days.
Was it ever actually a thing, though?
You can't.
It's one of the things you see in fiction, but surely...
You can't even stick a conical hat on your thickest born anymore. This is, yeah, it's bloody unbelievable. How are they supposed to learn that they're the dunce? How are they supposed to find out if they're not facing a corner for most of the day with a conical hat on? That's unbelievable, isn't it?
The herd needs to identify its runt.
And it will eat the food that cascades down to the third tier of
the dinner pyramid.
Yeah, which is firstborn.
Well, father at the top.
Father.
Yeah, patriarch at the top. Yeah.
Patriarch at the top. Patriarch's assistants.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that's undisgraced, as yet undisgraced uncles.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And mistress.
And mistress's family. And
Irish wolfhound.
at least a baker's dozen of bastards. Of patriarch-sired bastards. Are we even allowed to say that anymore?
Yeah.
Then next tier is Golden Child. So yes. Good at the violin. Mm-hmm. Decent Duke of Edinburgh.
Dab hand with a hockey stick. Mm-hmm.
And the Golden Child obviously has access to the gong, mm-hmm. which they can use to, well, they can use it for a variety of purposes, can't they, the gong, Mike?
They can use it as a dinner plate. They can use it as a hat. They can use it as a frisbee.
That's right.
They can use it to water their pet Shetland pony that they got for their 15th yeah. birthday.
It's also quite ceremonial, isn't it? Because as they wheel the gong around the home, the other children can be in no doubt of who's the favourite. Because, of course, they don't have gongs, do they, the others?
All they can hope for is the glint of the sun in their eyes as the gong plays jack-o'-lanterns with them.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the only piece of the gong they're getting.
Then, of course, the next tier is the artsy daughter.
Yes.
Lovely singing voice.
Terrible job prospects.
Can't be persuaded to do a law degree. Much to the chagrin of the parents.
Yeah.
Chagrin. Chagrin.
She, of course, has a menacing boyfriend who turns up on a motorbike every so often, who you're currently just campaigning against them using disinformation techniques, mm-hmm. pamphleting.
You're trying to tarnish him as a wastrel, but he's actually quite entrepreneurial. In fact, he's managed to GoFundMe his own zine.
And you'll never admit it, but inside, deep, deep within one of your editions of Auto Trader, you've actually secreted a copy of his zine, haven't you? Which you'll occasionally have a look at. And is it a digital zine? Just question. And did you have to print it out?
No, he did. He printed out a limited. There is a digital zine, but there's a limited print edition as well.
Yeah.
It depends how much you give to the GoFundMe. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you've actually started ploughing quite a lot of your money into the GoFundMe.
Because what's happened is you've had to, it's just gradually, very, very slowly, like coastal erosion. It's just gradually, you can't really put a finger on when it started, but you have become actually the biggest fan of his zine. I mean, you're almost secretly keeping that zine going, aren't you? And you're having to siphon funds away from your Golden Child.
You started the Reddit page on the zine, so, didn't you?
Yeah, I did, yeah. I love it. It's just a great, great zine. I mean, it's ticking all of everything you want from a zine, isn't it?
The thing is, you just love Kawasaki Dreams. It's a great zine.
It's such a good zine.
There's definitely an element of sort of like Japanese cartoon porniness about it.
Yeah, there's a
manga thread running through it, sure.
Yeah. It gives me a manga horn, yeah. Yeah. I'm the first one to. I'll toot my manga horn right now. I'll toot it. You know, I mean, I'm not ashamed of it. But it's just a great zine, isn't it? Regular output, strong content, great design work, strong pagination. you can really find your way around it, isn't it? The zine, it's almost got a kind of intuitive zine mapping almost. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a bit like the Argos catalogue in that respect, isn't it? You just feel like you know who you are.
Which, that was very much the progenitor of the zine, wasn't it? You couldn't have had the zine without the Argos catalogue existing first.
No. Well, it was...
Some people see it as a satire on the Argos catalogue.
Yeah. A very, very clever one.
But the big sticking point, of course, is that Japanese woman all wrapped up in tentacles based on your daughter?
Yeah. Because if it is, you're ready to turn on that guy and essentially rip him to shreds, aren't you? And actually... And actually cancel your subscription to the zine, potentially.
Probably not. The zine's so well made.
No, the zine, it's too good.
Even if your daughter broke up with him, you'd still be getting the zine on a monthly basis.
You're locked in now, that's it.
Yeah, in perpetuity.
So that's the second tier of the pyramid.
Is that only the second tier?
Yeah.
Yes, and third tier is
the dunce layer. Then that's right, all dunce the dunce layer. Children.
Yeah.
Otherwise known as the trough.
It's not a lot of fun in the trough.
And they subsist exclusively off onion skins, don't they? It's just all onion skins.
Mm-hmm. Guys, I've had an idea. Mm. So I know we talked before, Henry talked about making his first bill.
What?
Bill short for billion.
Oh. First Bill, oh. Sorry, yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
For, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Of course.
Okay, all right. I'm going to try use that today.
It's a good one. Mm. First Bill.
I picked that up from the TV show Succession, where they're billionaires and they talk about bills.
Is that in the latest new one, is it?
Yeah. They're trying to buy a newspaper group or something, and they're like, can we go to 10 Bill? So, Bill.
Okay. Bill. Okay.
Henry talked about making his first Bill by making a ready-scooped ice cream parlour.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Still quite a good idea, although they already do it in Putin's Russia.
They already do it
apparently.
In Russia, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But I've had another idea about how we can collectively make our first Bill.
Oh, yeah.
Because I've had an idea for a horror movie.
Oh, nice.
Okay.
Can I run it by you?
Please do.
Yes, please.
Okay. It opens. Mm-hmm.
Good start. I like it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good.
It's just the life of a regular guy.
What?
Played by, let's say, Henry Packer.
Oh, nice.
Okay.
Whew. Yep. It's already feeling pretty universal.
Mm-hmm. He's just got a regular life.
Mm-hmm. Hang on, how fast does he speak? Just regular? I've already got some questions about the character. So
there's no way you're going to be playing him, Henry.
come on, mate. It's a named character.
This is Chalamet all the way.
I will stand aside for Chalamet. The only person I would stand aside for would be Chalamet, potentially. But like a regular, normal, fast-talking, normal guy.
I think Chalamet's too good-looking for this role.
Okay.
Huh. Thanks, man. Cheers. Yeah, I mean, can I say morale is already dangerously low on this film? I'm actually smelling a cast mutiny.
I can see your dunce hat is actually drooping.
It's drooping. Not at all.
So regular guy with a soldered-on dunce hat. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a regular guy. He's got his regular job. He works in one of those cubicles you see in American TV and movies.
Yeah.
Classic place for an average guy to be holed up during the day.
Lovely. Yeah. Great bit of shorthand.
Probably got a slightly sarcastic boss.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So certainly that opening scene is like we establish how drab this guy's life is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everything's tones of biscuit. Tones sort of like custard cream-coloured shirt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bourbon-coloured tie. Isn't it just sort of biscuit tones? Ritz cheese cracker-coloured crackers. Obviously non-branded crackers, but unless we can get them to tie in with the project, Ben, so you might think about when it comes to funding. Because I'm happy to discuss all elements of the project. That's one of the great benefits you get with working with me.
Don't get this with Chalamet, do you?
Do not.
He's not going to write a letter to Ritz crackers.
He's not interested. Yeah. He's too busy trying to track his genetic heritage to see how far back he's related to horses. That's what all he puts all his funding into. Carry on.
Okay, so he goes home from work, gets home. We have the scene where it shows how boring his life is. Like, he cracks a beer. Mm. He's got a very sparse house. Mm-hmm. Goes to bed. So that's the opening scene. Mm-hmm. We've established this guy's a normal guy.
Yeah, you're hooked at this point.
Yeah.
Next morning. Mm. Beep, 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 beep. He wakes up. At the end of his bed is Mike Wozniak.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Playing some sort of evil goblin character.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's sort of laughing.
Like that. Oh, God. Okay. Yeah. It's quite scary.
I don't know, Mike, if you can give us some of that.
No, you're going to have to do that, Ben. You're going to have to do the. you're going to have to dub that over. Yeah.
Okay. We'll do that ADR. Is that what it's called?
Yeah,
ADR?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think in Hollywood, most like goblins are ADR'd, I think. There's a couple of guys who do the goblin voices.
Yeah. Yeah.
We see our main character. He's got an explosive strapped to his chest.
Bloody hell.
Okay. So, oh, my God. What? So it's a bit like the Saw franchise, this. So
okay.
He's got the thing strapped to his chest.
Yeah.
And the goblin goes, and outlines the premise of the movie, which is that the man has got 1 hour and the charge will explode and he will be completely blown to bits in 1 hour unless he can find a slow worm.
I've got some questions. I'm intrigued. Mike, have you got any questions?
Yeah, my question is to you, Henry. My question is about your question.
Okay.
Is your question based on the fact that you wouldn't know a slow worm if you found one at the bottom of your cup of coffee?
That's correct. I mean, I don't think I know any other kind of worm.
I mean, what
is a slow worm?
It's like a snake. It's like a British...
Oh, is that? Have we talked about this before?
It's not a snake. It's a legless lizard, but yes.
You might have saved me a bollocking there, Ben.
Tell me about slow... I'm interested in the idea. I'm really interested in...
I'm interested in a real-life situation in which you're given 1 hour to find a slow worm wherever you are in Britain, and how possible that would be.
I'm looking at one on Google. Okay.
I don't think that would count. suspense-wise, I think. I think it's going to have to be IRL slow worm.
Okay.
But he could certainly print out a photograph. And
if he's got a really decent printer, that might buy him a bit of time, but...
I've got a few questions. So if we're like Blue Sky, if we're sort of like breaking scripts together, talking about just checking ideas around, in real life, there's two approaches I might take. One is, who is this goblin guy? Like, what's his story?
He sounds like he's a conservationist.
He's a sort of conservation terrorist.
I think so, yeah. He's worried about the...
But can I...
The steep decline in the prevalence of slow worms in the UK.
Well, I suppose I would try and reason. I might try and reason with the goblin. I mean, already just saying that, it just sounds bad, doesn't it? Sounds like a bad. It's one of the defining features of a goblin, isn't it?
It sounds like a bad idea or a great album title.
Yeah. For a prog rock band, reasoning with the goblin. You can't reason with a goblin. I try to reason with the goblin in my mind. That's quite good. So second option is, it's basically, you want to find a slow worm, find Packham, and you'll find a slow worm.
Oh, yes.
I would go to Packham. I would pull out every celebrity contact I've got in the book. We're talking Mike Wozniak. We're talking... Ben. Everyone. I'd go straight to my celebrity black book of contacts.
Chris Packham is the key here.
Chris Packham is the key. So I'd pull every favour I've got.
For any international listeners who might not know, how do we describe Chris Packham? He's the champion of the squirrel. Yeah. He's the hedgehog's hero.
Yeah.
He's the go-to guy.
Yeah.
For the stricken badger.
He's the prefect of the peregrine.
He is.
He's an ambassador, isn't he, for voles, weasels. Mm-hmm. If it's small, furry, and you've considered whether the legality of shooting it...
he'll be braced to leap in front of that projectile.
I can't think of any... I'm thinking of our American listeners. I can't think of any American naturalists. Are there any?
There must be, surely.
Because we have a great tradition. We have, going back to Nutkins, Bellamy.
Maybe it's just something that we don't import. Maybe it's because we're so replete with them here. It's pretty much the only thing the UK doesn't need to import is naturalists. Because we do export a bit, don't we?
We do.
Gets about.
I feel like though in America, like their version of it would be a documentary where it's like, you know, an image of a buffalo. And then it would just be like a really, really sort of slick voiceover rather than a guy in a gilet. So it'd be like, the buffalo, the most majestic animal on the American plains.
Yes, it's either that or it's grizzly ice truck slalom roadrunner. We put three grizzlies behind the wheels of three juggernauts. Gave them only 4 days.
You've got to get to Anchorage, kids.
Welcome to, we're going to send that raccoon to that moon. It's Raccoon to the Moon Challenge 5.
Whereas in Britain it's much more hello and welcome. We've set up a small camera inside a box and we can see some baby blue tits. Enjoy yourself.
And we're going to list off we're going to name over 50 British birds with suggestive names, and we're not even going to smirk at any of them in today's episode. We're going to mention the tit warbler, the fat dick, cockshitter,
the vicar's chuff,
10 wibble c***s.
Yeah, do they have them in America? Yeah, I imagine there's a lot of jingoistic, any of these bulls
could become president of the United States. Know what Britain's biggest and most dangerous animal is? A baby cocker spaniel. That's right. This bison could kick the shit out of that cocker spaniel. And still have time to do all the paperwork involved in joining the either the Democrat or the Republican Party and getting involved in some caucuses.
And then obviously Australia has got the kind of, obviously he's now dead, but the kind of Steve Irwin side of things where it's like wrestling a crocodile.
They've had a strong tradition of it. Yeah.
And also everything they've got. That guy's a jingo wonger. It's attacking a wibbler wabbler and it's got a kick. Everything's got a wanger wang.
Must make sure not to get any closer, otherwise it's going to. It's not a bug that smart.
They all, you know, always get horribly injured, but that's all part of the fun. They're like the equivalent of the sort of woodwork teacher at school who proudly displays how few fingers he has left. It's that kind of badges of honour.
You can count the amount of fingers he's got left on one hand. he can count the amount of fingers he's got left.
I think it sounded
on
good the first
hand.
Time. I think it sounded like you've done it. Yeah. Don't
try.
You're going to get yourself in a pickle. So Packham, you need to find Packham, who I believe lives in the New Forest. I feel like I've heard him talk about that in interviews
Does he?
Before. Or maybe
yeah,
that's
I
Mark
so.
Commode.
So can you get to his house in an hour from where you are?
Oh, I tell you where I could get to.
I'm going to be driving through the New Forest later today. I'll see if I can take him down for you. If that helps.
Be helpful. But this film isn't happening today, is it? Is this film happening
it's
today?
Happening this afternoon.
Is it set today then? If it was set today,
Henry,
this
Henry,
would be helpful.
Henry, look at your chest.
It's already begun.
Beep, 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 beep. It's not Mike on the Zoom, it's a goblin.
Those aren't my usual frankfurter strapped to my chest. It's dynamite sticks. What have you done with my frankfurters? Where are my chestfurters? there is a naturalist that could get me to Packham, because I think any film, Ben, especially one which, let's face it, has got fairly paper thin thematically, it's weak, this film, isn't it?
Sorry.
It hasn't got a lot going on.
What?
What you need to do is you need to break things into stages. So rather than going straight to Packham, I need to find someone that can take me to Packham. And I've got a decent chance I could track down Bill Oddie within an hour of now. I won't say, but I know where he lives. Not literally. I don't know which tree, but I know the area.
You can find the droppings easily enough, and then all you need to do is look up.
Then listen out for his plaintive song.
But watch out for his mating song.
Uh-oh.
Lewd content warning. Lewd content. Content.
Hey, hey!
And remember, he does have a barbed penis. So if he starts meeting with you, that is you until the autumn. You're going to have to... That's just going to carry on. You're going to have to take him to events with you. He's going to be there. You know what I mean?
Now we have to explain to people outside the UK who Bill Oddie is. Imagine a mixture of Chris Packham, who we've talked about, the naturalist, and Michael Palin, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Comedy stalwart turned naturalist.
Yes. Like, imagine Eddie Murphy really got into bird watching.
Yeah, that's it. Because they had a similar edgy vibe, didn't they, back in the day?
I think I'd feel a bit insulted if it was Michael Palin. See, basically, Packham plus Palin equals Oddie.
So I think that's pretty good.
So your strategy is you find Oddie.
Find Oddie, because I didn't have to find Packham. He can take me back. Now, if he's...
You bring him a bag of nuts or something?
Yeah, exactly. You have to find the thing to pay the... Because if you're looking at archetypes, aren't we looking at story archetypes here, Ben, if we're going to get the story to work? So what you need is, you need the call. So that's Mike. That happens 20 minutes into a movie, as I understand it. So we're going to have to 20 minutes of me eating biscuits and living my grey life. That's going to be quite a hard slog, that. But 20 minutes in, the goblin appears in my bed, accepts me the challenge. That's the call.
That's the inciting incident.
I'll refuse the call. I'll say no. And they'll say, come on, mate. Something along those lines.
You do have some dynamite strapped to your chest.
And then I'll go, good point. Except for the call.
Yeah.
And then I have to find the wise man. That's Oddie. He operates as a threshold guardian.
So he's perhaps going to throw a riddle your way. So you either have to answer his riddle or just give him some nuts. One of the two.
Yeah, it'll be exactly.
Riddle or nuts? Riddle or nuts?
But what he'll say
Henry
is...
Henry Packer.
But then what he'll normally do is I'll have to get some sacred nuts. So they might be special nuts. Because this is an urban setting. It might be like dry salted. Or ready dry salted, or honey roasted, honey salted.
Chocolate covered cashews.
he might give me a really difficult one, like chocolate cashews, but from that brand you only get on aeroplanes where the logo is a cashew with a monocle.
But a jumbo bag. And you know no such thing exists.
Then I'm going to have to go to the headquarters of Richard Branson. I set off on the journey. He's attached to me now because he's got the barbed penis. I keep him on. He stays with me as a sort of advisor.
Yeah. So there's a nice odd couple vibe now.
There's a really nice odd couple vibe.
Mm-hmm. It's a kind of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles type vibe.
Yeah. But just with a lot of very, very sort of ancient forests of the night, fox screaming because of the mating's very, very painful for both of us.
Yeah.
So there'll be a lot of blood-curdling screams.
And, of course, the increasing discomfort from... a litter of 40 oddy fetuses growing in your belly.
But really heartwarming at the same time to look at their little transparent faces. And their perfectly round mouths with the thousands of little teeth.
And you're glowing on it. I have to say, you are glowing. It's done, something
absolutely
to your
glowing.
Skin. Is
oh, it
just,
really has.
Mm.
So yeah, track down the nuts, feed him the nuts. And he shows me how to get to... Packham.
A35
today. Turns out it's the A35 as I suspected initially. I could have bet my own bottom dollar it would have been the A35. I shouldn't have bothered with the, but it doesn't matter there because the story's now motoring. There's been two songs.
I'm freezing with a coffin. I try to reason with a coffin in my mind.
And the litter of transparent, semi-transparent, oddy fetuses, they join in as the sort of, don't know, sort of
Greek chorus
element. As a sort of Greek
chorus. Can I suggest, when we actually get to Packham, it could be a kind of Wizard of Oz thing where it turns out that Packham isn't actually
nice,
a real thing. It's like he's just a facade.
Oh, he's just an idea.
That's I quite like that.
And who is behind the idea? Is it all of the is the hive brain of all the woodland animals?
Yes.
Are they they're their own lobbying group made flesh?
It would make sense, wouldn't it?
It's like a scarecrow puppet.
And I think there should be a moment where have they summoned me to destroy me? I'm just picturing a moment where it feels like I'm about to get destroyed and then suddenly. Okay, so I'm picturing Packham is so he's just a conglomeration of woodland creatures, is he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
he's not a real person,
but he's not. No, but this conglomeration, it turns out, has even though they campaign for conservation, they have been secretly assassinating slow worms to try and create anxiety about the environment. It's a sacrificial lamb.
Ah,
it's a false flag operation, essentially.
That's good. So their motivation is actually it's good because it's good if your villain has quite a kind of understandable motivation. So like, actually, they're you know, in a way that they've got the right idea, but they're doing it in the wrong way. All I know is at some point towards the end I'm about to get destroyed by a horse with a machete.
Bear in mind you have got a bomb strapped to your chest. They could just sort of tie you up and wait for that to happen.
Okay, well I've got that to deal with as well.
Yeah, you've got a lot.
You know
plate.
What I reckon the bomb's about to go off, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly, and then we assume I'm dead, that's it, and then suddenly there's a rumble and it's like, what's happening? What's going on? He's birthing the oddies. He's birthing the oddies.
Oh, the oddies ex machina.
The oddies ex machina starts streaming out of me and they all sort of jump on the bomb and smother it.
Well, I don't think we want to sacrifice the oddies.
No. But,
is your character clever enough to perform the Frankfurter switcheroo at some point?
I reckon.
So everyone thinks he's wearing the plastic.
That's nice.
But actually...
Actually, I've done a switcheroo.
Actually, he strapped the plastic to...
To Bill Oddie?
To Bill Oddie. Really,
possibly, or
just an innocent possibly bystander, just a, really. He was just minding his own business, but
sort of TB-addled beaver.
It does feel like the threads of this film are starting to fall apart a bit at the end. Mm.
It's often at the end where the real challenges come, Ben. But I think we're definitely making progress.
First, Bill-wise,
I think we're looking rosy.
So, guys, Mike, are you signed up to play the Goblin?
Yeah, I've got nothing else going on, mate.
Great. Henry, are you willing to sign on as the main character?
I think, you know, we're going to have to talk. We're going to have to talk money. We're going to have to talk rights. I want to do the thing that Alec Guinness did with Star Wars, which is refuse a salary, but instead take a percentage of toys.
Okay.
And I say, basically for everything I do now, I'm no mug. I'll take a percentage of toys, thanks. No. I won't take an advance for that illustration work. No, I won't. I won't take any money for that. Percentage of toys.
I did that when I worked on Radio 4's The News Quiz, and I'm still waiting for that to pay off.
But percentage of toys. When those
Sandy Toxic toys come out.
You're going to be absolutely laughing. Okay, well, it feels like we need to do some work on the end, but maybe listeners can suggest some ways that can go, because I think we've got...
Yeah, if any script doctors are listening.
I think the first two acts are very, very solid.
Let's turn on the bean machine.
Yes, please.
This week's topic, as randomly selected by the Bean Machine, was sent in by, surely not.
It's not another Neil.
Philip Kerrigan of Kerrigan's Mustard.
Ooh,
fantastic.
It's Kerrigan's time, it's Kerrigan's time.
Bring me the Kerrigan's, bring me the Kerrigan's.
It's Kerrigan's time.
Philip, basically... I want to affirm it is totally random, but I think Philip Kerrigan has just sent in a lot of them. So there's quite a lot of Philip Kerrigans in there.
And it's not just that we've got two listeners, is it, Neil and Philip Kerrigan?
Right. So we've had a topic sent in by Philip Kerrigan of Kerrigan's Mustard.
Mm.
And it is dentists.
Ooh.
Okay, this is a bit crazy. My dad doesn't take anaesthetic when he goes to the dentist.
Nor do I.
Really?
Because they're just looking at it and going, one, fine, two.
Yeah. You mean when he has a procedure?
Because I need it just to go in.
Are you getting fully anaesthetic every time you go in?
I go full general.
Wheeled in on a trolley.
I go full general. Wake me up the next day.
He just wants to remain sharp and alert at all times.
My dad does fillings without anaesthetics.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm saying about my dad. I think it must be a generational thing. It's to do with... you're better off, essentially, Mike will know this.
Oh, yeah.
The pain is essentially, it's the body's internet, isn't it? It's a way that your body informs you about what's going on at different places. It's not real. I mean, it's horrible, but essentially it's just an information system, isn't it? It's like Firefox.
Yes. This is like, are you aware of David Foster Wallace?
Yes.
He wrote a really good article about lobsters and whether they feel pain or not.
Oh, right.
And he went to the Maine Lobster Festival where there's like people just eating lobsters everywhere.
Okay.
And some new science had come out that was saying that maybe lobsters did feel pain, I think. But previous to that, they proved that they do feel pain or they do have a pain system, but they don't necessarily associate pain with distress. So pain for them might just be like a light on a dashboard coming on, going...
Your left leg's fallen off.
Yeah, you probably need to move.
Problem in right pincer. In right pincer.
Yeah. So for your dad, he's got a very similar sort of take on pain, which is like, it's not like
he's got a lobster mindset.
Yeah.
French man with a small net approaching. Delicious garlic. Does smell good, but it's bad news overall. Bad news overall. Does smell delicious, though, but bad news. There's also another theory about lobsters, which is big online at the moment. Do you know this?
Go on.
No. Oh, is it they don't die? They're immortal?
No, that's not a theory.
That's true. Lobsters are immortal unless they get hit.
Unless they're eaten by a Frenchman.
Unless they get decapitated by another lobster with a sword.
Are they just really, really hapless? That's why they always end up dying.
I think the idea is that without any external things going on, if you just put it in a tank and left it, it would live forever because they never get ill. There's no lobster illness you can get.
So there's no lobster old age?
No.
But then that is like, that's like a fairy tale, isn't it? Wait, or like one of those old horror stories where it's like you meet an ancient old, well, just an old lady on a train,
right?
And she's like, "You can have one. Take this crab's foot. Kiss it in the morning, and you will live forever." And you go, "Oh, brilliant." Kiss it in the morning, you look in the mirror and like, "Oh, I'm a fucking lobster. Oh, Christ." The crab's foot was a clue. I shouldn't have got to stop accepting these. Because it's like, okay, you don't get ill, but you're already completely fucked. You're a lobster. You're disgusting. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You can't even reach the cash machine to get money out.
You can't get money out.
Are you saying that being a lobster is an illness, basically?
You've accidentally snipped through all of your cards and your wallet?
Put it this way. If I crawled into my GP's with, you know,
as a lobster.
Next week as a lobster,
your GP would know immediately there was nothing wrong with you and you're going to live forever. Yeah. Send you packing.
Clean bit of health. And she'd actually say, "You know what? You can even delete the NHS app from your phone. I'm that confident you're going to live forever." And I'd be like,
"But just don't go to Maine, whatever you do."
Sorry, so what's your lobster fact?
There's a fact about lobster going around, or a theory, which is that lobster doesn't taste nice.
I saw this.
Yeah, it's only a luxury food because of scarcity, which actually ties in with what we talked about recently, too, with magpies.
Which do taste terrific.
And why Ben enjoys eating magpies so much. Why magpie is such a sought-after romantic, quite a romantic snack, isn't it? Or thing to eat on a date.
I read that as well. It was interesting because it was that lobsters aren't necessarily scarce, but they don't keep very well.
They don't
travel
well.
You can't transport them very easily. So if you're if you're in the middle of America, yep, and nowhere near the coast, to have a lobster is quite scarce. So yeah, mm-hmm, if you're an internal American,
yeah,
it was seen as very posh, mm-hmm, and then now we think of it as, yeah, posh.
And by the same, and that's why, by the same token, Ben, picture a grotty old a sort of ox, maybe like an ox kidney, a sort of slightly rancid ox kidney,
mm-hmm,
with a big footprint in it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So not appetizing. But now imagine it at the top of a very, very high staircase with a series of challenges,
yeah,
on the staircase. So some of the old gladiators are there with big foam, big bits of foam on the end of sticks. They're going to knock you off the staircase.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of the staircase is slick with oil, and there's various gun turrets and stuff aimed at the staircase. Now, how do you feel about that ox kidney?
Try and keep me away from it, because I want that.
You want it, don't you? Yeah. Yeah. You try and stop me, Wolf from Gladiator or whatever, isn't it? Because you're going to get up there. Because when something's harder to acquire, it's more attractive, isn't it?
Yeah. I've only eaten a lobster once at a wedding in Boston, and it's not very nice, but the experience is good fun because you have to wear a bib. You get given a sort of cracking device, which is quite
a
good fun.
A little tool set, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. All the accoutrements.
Yeah, it's quite good fun, isn't it?
You're given a copy of the Financial Times, aren't you?
and a warrant for your arrest for financial crimes.
all that stuff adds to it, doesn't it? How do you feel about a small bowl with some water in it and a bit of lemon when that's produced?
I don't like the way that somebody will inevitably make a joke about drinking it.
Mm-hmm.
That puts a downer on my entire day.
Mental note, Henry, don't crack that joke just now like you were going to. Oh, and some cold lemon soup. Thanks very much. Yeah. That, you don't like that joke?
I'm going home.
The lobster, the word and just the image of it has become a complete shorthand for massive wealth, hasn't it? And luxury and just the pinnacle of... Whereas actually, it is just a really, really gross...
Big sea woodlouse, basically.
yeah.
Have you ever had a lobster, Mike?
I've had lobster, yeah, a couple of times.
Of course you have.
Come on, Mike.
Yeah, come on. I don't think I disliked the taste either. I think I quite liked it.
How does,
Well, maybe I just thought I should like it, and I tricked myself that I did like it. I don't know.
How do lobsters relate to crabs, do you think? Is there a...
I can't see them getting on, personally.
No.
That's a
good point, though, Henry. Like, are they related? Like,
I mean, arguably, they've got an awful lot in common.
But is it a bit like when someone introduces you to someone and they go, oh, you're going to love Rob.
He's, that's exactly what it's like.
You're so similar. You're really going to get on. And then
he's
meet him.
Magpies as well. that is so true. You're going to love Rob. That's what lobsters are to crabs. They're Rob. And actually, they end up sitting in the corner of a rock pool together with nothing to say, both seething. Yeah. And Rob going, yeah, we've both got pincers, but completely different types of pincer. Oh, God. Unbelievable. I've actually got quite a lot of meat in me compared to that. Unbelievable. Not the same at all.
And where are you keeping your eyeballs anyway? Oh, I suppose your eyeballs are sort of dangling off. Yeah, forget that.
Yeah. But with me, you can quite easily take all the meat out, dress it a bit, and then put it back into my carapace. Yeah. And
you can use me as a plate.
Yeah. He's barely got a carapace. You know, the irony is, I've made the effort to come out, and I'm talking to someone who's a bit like, I'd much rather actually just be tanked with some scallops. Or, you know what I mean? If I can see the scallops from over here, they're having a really good time. I'm stuck with this absolutely fucking tedious crab.
Here's my take.
Hot take?
I think bad teeth... Well, not even bad teeth, just natural teeth, are, in a world of straight teeth in Hollywood, etc., quite sexy.
Really?
Bad teeth are?
Yeah. Not bad, but just like normal...
Teeth with character.
You like a little bit of rainbow, the odd blotch of brown.
No, not necessarily that.
One of them just yellowing snaggletooth.
One of them slightly swinging in the breeze.
Mm. This could give away any second.
One that you can push
wind
through.
Blown it's through
a,
it.
One that you can push through. It's actually a false tooth, which hides a little area where a priest would have hidden.
Yeah. One that's just grown in the wrong place, like in the middle of their cheek or their tongue.
One that actually goes back all the way. So it actually goes back all the way to the back of the mouth.
One that protrudes a full 9 inches out of their gob entirely. It could be used to keep receipts or toast marshmallows.
I think what it is if you watch old films, there are people in those films that are meant to be sexy. That's why they're in it, right?
Yeah.
Leading men, leading ladies.
Nigel Havers,
great example. Yeah. With normal teeth, and I think they are somehow more attractive than the sort of completely
regimented. There's a straightness to... Because the ideal American... teeth, as far as I can tell, there's a kind of straightness and a kind of they're all perfect squares in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you can get nice teeth which have a bit of character, your European teeth, where maybe you can fit a Mars bar through the gap in between the two main front ones. But maybe that's a fun way to eat a Mars bar. Sometimes you shove it straight in, you swallow it,
you need a bit of help. But it's...
You need a bit of help. You need several glasses of water, but it could be a party trick. Because sometimes, because teeth can still have character, but be clean and nice looking, rather than having to be all regimented. But this feels like we're apologists for just gross teeth, doesn't it? Still,
could be.
It's not gross though. It's just natural teeth.
Okay, but how far do you push that natural? What if it's natural for them to be slightly rancid and falling out?
So I think my level is 70s TV star.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's what I want people's teeth to look like.
So David Jason. Like, in America, if I was to go to LA, set up a bunch of meetings, which I could do like that. Yeah?
Meetings with who, though?
series of dentists,
waiters, dentists,
the administrative official at a forklift truck training facility.
Yep. What are we on about?
You going to LA and getting some meetings? I can't. Yeah, remember
so
why.
If I had lunch meetings in LA,
yeah.
Obviously, the reason they do lunch meetings, breakfast meetings, is so they can see your teeth, isn't it? That's why they do them over a meal. Mm-hmm. That's well known. As soon as I started speaking...
Yeah, so as soon as you start speaking, I think one of the execs picks up his phone
And he's very obviously talking to a horse dentist. and he's booking you in.
And he's asking if you wouldn't mind biting into some putty so he can get an impression.
Yeah.
He's going to courier that down. ASAP.
Henry, do you mind just eating this large raw carrot in front of us? you could do the lines from the film in a minute, but first of all, just eat this carrot in front of us. He's eating it too fast. He's mainly horse. Pull out. But I still think my teeth, like my front one here, if I took my head up, it's actually trying to get on top of the one on the right.
I think it probably rules you out of kind of leading man roles. The sort of thing that maybe The Rock Johnson would be playing.
Okay.
But I think you could certainly play a sort of syphilitic medieval peasant.
Man with hat, possibly.
I'll take that and I'll raise you to syphilitic leading man with hat. Yeah?
Okay, time to read your emails. Instead of playing the normal email jingle, we've had one sent in by Mike. A different Mike, of course.
Very good. Thank you.
Here it is. Dear Beans, the story of Ben watching The Apprentice with the skeleton of a magnum stuck to his chest inspired me to create this remix of the email jingle. Now, it is an Alan Sugar remix. For those not versed in British public life, Alan Sugar is our Donald Trump. Not really, but sort of. He's the millionaire in charge of The Apprentice.
Basically, if you want to get an idea of who he is, look at your desk, look in your pocket, look at the brand name on the laptop you're listening to this through, look at your TV, look at your kettle, look at your tumble dryer, your whisk, and it will have the words Amstrad on it. Won't it?
No doubt this email was sent in using the Amstrad emailer.
That's right. He is the living, breathing, beating heart of the tech industry, isn't he? He is. Imagine the information superhighway, and then imagine a steam train on it.
It's derailed into a ditch on a dirt track.
But it's being filmed for a pretty high rating BBC One repeatable format.
So hopefully that's clear. Yeah. Let's have the jingle, shall we?
When you send an email, you must give thanks to the postmasters that came before.
Good morning, postmaster. Anything for me?
Just some old shit. When you send an email, that represents progress, like a robot shooing a horse.
Give me your heart.
My beautiful bloody horse.
Wow.
That must have taken literally hundreds of man hours, right?
How much
that's a huge
does
task.
Alan Sugar charge to do voiceover? I had no idea he was doing voiceover work. He's got a slightly awkward delivery, hasn't he? It's not entirely smooth, but obviously, you know, it's not his profession. But.
Well, thank you, Mike. Spectacular.
That was so good. God, yeah, how does that work, sifting through The Apprentice?
To find him saying the words horse.
Oh, I suppose there was that horse challenge, wasn't it, when the two teams both had to buy the biggest horse. They would have gone to that one, wouldn't they?
So thank you for that. Right, your emails. Now, we've had lots of emails about pirates, which is fun. We talked about pirates. This one's from Richard from Bremen. In your pirates episode, you questioned why they went to the lengths of making rule breakers walk the plank as a punishment rather than just pushing them overboard. I'm afraid I must bollock you on this point. I don't think that's not fair. We merely asked the question.
Go on, let's hear him out there.
Well, hear the man out, Ben.
I'm afraid I must bollock you on this point because there was an important legal reason behind it. According to Admiralty law at the time, you could not be charged with murder if the recently deceased had merely fallen due to clumsiness whilst blindfolded. Very much like the modern day when your elder siblings hide behind the why are you hitting yourself defence.
Yes, it's paper thin, isn't it?
So what that I remember this now, because what they used to do is they used to pretend they'd just been playing a game of pin the tail on the crab.
That's it.
Where the guy was on a blindfold and he'd obviously walk into the sea and stick it onto a crab.
But they're saying, so they would say,
so you might win the game
during a, you might still win the game, but
you lose the game of life.
You lose the game, yeah, because you've got a cannon strapped to your ankle.
Yeah.
So that is interesting, isn't it? However, sorry, I'm not accepting that as a bollock. I do not want to live in a world where someone asks a question.
I don't feel bollocks. I don't think he was a bollocking. I think he's going to have to auto-bollock himself. I think he's just made quite an interesting point. You sent us an interesting email, Richard.
It's the art. We can't have a situation where the answer to a question is a bollocking. I mean, how's that going to... Would you like fries with that, sir? Bollock back. You know what I mean? We can't be in a situation where just answering a question is...
So I think this is filed under bollock back. We are bollocking you, Richard, for imagining that you could bollock us for asking a question.
Yeah. And thanking you at the same time for your email.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, thanks for the info. Interesting info, for sure.
And for the excellent contribution to the content. but also feel the wrath of our bollock back at the same time. Isn't it?
It is.
If you'll bollock me, then I'll bollock you. Bollock back.
That reminds me of a thing I heard once about... some smugglers killed someone, and the way they did it was they got the gun and they attached, or the musket or whatever, and attached the trigger to like loads and loads of pieces of string, and they all pulled it together. So that obviously backfired because it meant they were all then accused of murder and all went
to prison.
Presumably the entire prison gang got hanged and gibbeted. No, but there's some story about that sort of trying to evade.
But sometimes one of your mates, I mean, they tell you an idea confidently. It feels like a good idea at the time. It didn't quite make sense, but it somehow made sense, but it didn't make sense. And yeah.
Yeah.
That's how these things get out of control, don't they?
Okay. This is from Carl, who we know.
Oh, that Carl.
Carl,
lovely.
Carl from Barry.
Mm-hmm. Carl the painter.
Hello, Beans. This is not a bollocking.
Strong start.
Well, okay, it's funny that's you say that, like, but I've instantly raised my bollock hackles are raised instantly. And he said, you know, so like, if it really wasn't a bollocking, why is he saying it isn't a bollocking?
Yeah.
Get thee to a bollockery. I mean, methink thy bollock is too much, etc.
He writes, brackets, hearing Henry's meek acceptance of one I sent before was a lot to bear, and I couldn't go through that again.
Did I meekly accept a bollocking off him once?
Well, he told you not to call Leonardo da Vinci Leonardo da Vinci Da Vinci because it's not his name, it's where he's from.
This is bearing all the hallmarks of a bollock so far.
Because that would be like calling Mike from Portsmouth.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, he writes, this is a respectful, multi, but could be wrong, rebuttal / counterclaim.
Okay. a bollock by any other name.
Exactly.
Would smell sweet.
Yeah.
Rebuttal / counterclaim of the week.
Growing up in Tavistock, West Devon, my primary school was about 100 yards from a great bronze statue of the town's hero, Sir Francis Drake. Mm-hmm. Everyone who ever went to that school is an expert on Drake and could confidently tell you that he is famous for precisely three things. One, circumnavigating the globe on a ship called the Golden Hind, named after a kind of deer. Two, saving England by defeating the Spanish Armada, brackets, after first coolly finishing his game of bowls on Plymouth Hoe. Mm-hmm. And three, looking absolutely terrific in tights. Mm-hmm. He did not, however, introduce the potato to Britain. That was Sir Walter Raleigh, brackets, or the poor man's Drake, as we call him. Sir Francis brought back the coconut, which he gave to Queen Elizabeth, and she liked it much more than Raleigh's potato.
Is that to me? This was it. Me was it? It wasn't me that said about the potato, was it?
It sounds like it was.
I reckon it was Ben.
I think it might be me, but
I certainly didn't query it.
Either way, I'm washing my hands of it.
Yeah,
but Henry, this rebuttal / counterclaim has been very much put in your direction. So, is it rebuttal / counterclaim accepted, or is it reflecto rebuttal / counterclaim?
The problem we've got here is that there's no way I'll ever be bothered to check whether or not this is true, what he said.
You know what I mean? Yeah. We've had a few emails, actually, that pointed out that he didn't bring back the potato. That was... Walter Raleigh.
I'm quite interested in the fact that Drake brought back the coconut, because, let's face it, I can't believe Elizabeth preferred the coconut, because coconut, that is quite a rubbish thing to bring back, isn't it? Do you reckon? Because it's like
the basis of the bounty.
Oh, this could be a this could form the centerpiece of some desserts and chocolate snacks, which really, really divide people.
It's the beginnings of Brexit.
It is, isn't it? It's never one of those things that everyone gets behind, is it? A coconut dessert. It's always like... Mm.
Yeah, but before he brought the coconuts to Elizabeth, she was having really shit Thai green curries. They just weren't working.
They just weren't.
With that gravy base.
There's nothing to lighten it up. Nothing to lift it.
Bollocking accepted.
Douglas emails, Dear Beans... Mm-hmm. I hugely enjoyed your recent episode on pirates. Pirates are a delicate topic for me as a mariner because the idea of my ship being hijacked by modern pirates scares the shit out of me.
Fair play.
Fair play.
Yeah.
But thanks to your lukewarm mockery of the history of the profession, I feel bolstered to laugh at them and shall undermine their authority by playing the episode to any pirate who stumbles aboard my ship.
Armed to the teeth.
I shall be joining my next ship on the 10th of April, armed with a hard drive full of three bean salad and a heap of misplaced confidence. He also writes, this invaluable take on pirates doesn't excuse Henry's bullshit list of London pests for, as being
why
Britain's...
Am I getting... Why am I getting such a bad time today? All I do is try and have a nice chat and...
Yeah, it sounds like some people think you're talking a heap of shit.
This is really starting to feel like a bit of a witch hunt. But go on.
So we had a problem. You gave a list of Britain's big five.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I can't remember exactly, but I think he
Weasel, badger, rat, otter, Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Yeah, exactly. Here we go. Well, he says, we're not on large ships. I skipper a marine tourism boat, and I would like to offer my own contenders for the British big five. Sea eagle, red deer... Ooh. Orca, grey seal, Dutch tourist. Yours affectionately, Douglas from the Isle of Skye.
It's a great list.
That does sound quite good. Red deer, though, in the sea, is he saying?
I'm sure. I think any of them can be in the sea or on land. It's up to you.
You can see them from the sea, maybe.
They're all fully amphibious, are they, that lot?
Yeah.
I'm also assuming, Douglas,
that sounds quite good.
You're the skipper of a marine tourism boat. Pompidou discount, I imagine, 15% off... anyone going on that kind of wildlife seaborne safari, I would imagine.
Thanks, Douglas.
And also, amphibious tours of... where does he live again?
Isle of Skye.
Can I say, I'm about to do a joke here, which is definitely going to be terrible, but I've committed to it.
Okay.
I respect that.
Amphibious... of course, amphibious tours of the Isle of Skye are much like figurines for semi-erotic French figurines... Ceramic figurines of sort of erotic ladies that you might buy, and that they're always best when they've got a glass bottom. It doesn't even make any sense. It's not a joke. But I mentally committed to it, so I had to go through with it.
I think maybe, Henry, it might be a good idea for you to take a period of leave from the podcast.
do you think...
Pending the results of an inquiry.
Because if there had been any... If there was any doubt that I was flailing and really struggling for my podcast life, I think the glass bottom joke really... really got rid of any lingering doubts about that, that I am very much a podcaster in crisis right now. Well, but quickly, though, what was the question from that guy?
He didn't have a question. He just wanted to express that he didn't like your list of the big five British animals. He felt he had.
Okay. But he was buoyed up. He feels, you know.
Buoyed?
He feels buoyed up.
He's buoyed
to confront Somalian pirates that might attack him in the Norwegian fjords or wherever he's going.
Patreon.com/3beansalad
A big thank you to everyone who signed up on our Patreon.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Patreon.com/threebeansalad. And what do you get? You get ad-free episodes. Mm-hmm. You get a monthly bonus episode. We actually put up two bonus episodes last month because we had so much
bumper
stuff. And basically, we just record more than we end up using in these episodes, and they go out in the bonus episode. Have a look on there. There's different tiers. If you sign up at the Sean Bean tier, you get a shout out in the Sean Bean Lounge where Mike was last night.
Sure was. Yeah, decent one last night because, of course, it was the...
Was it the Flaming Marine Safari?
It was. Thank you, Ben. And here's my report.
A fully flooded Sean Bean Lounge greeted the Sean Bean Loungers this week who, replete with aqualungs, waterproof spotter's guides and just-in-case harpoons, were ready to enjoy Sean Bean's Flaming Marine Safari. Charlie Hunt got lucky early, spotting Andrew Schmidt riding a manatee through a wet ring of fire. Kira impressively picked up the trail of a sparkler-wielding sea otter, and Johnny Clooney claimed to have seen a giant squid blowing smoke rings. Kim Parsons and Ashley Bradbury couldn't agree on the best way to coax out a flaming hammerhead and needed Debbie Coppell to mediate chum style. A dose of committee thinking later, and the three of them accidentally coaxed out Stephen Gover from a flaming kelp Airbnb he'd been hibernating in since June 2019. Brittany attempted to document the still groggy Stephen on a Polaroid, but this riled the creature who took it out on Jamie Goff and Richard Bourne by disassembling then reassembling them into what, with the eye of faith, looked for all the world like a family of hot haddock on a Catherine wheel. Sarah Weston and Christine Morgan took selfies with a magnesium-flamed barracuda and, overly focused on the task in hand, backed into Jodie Fraser Shaw's non-flaming personal pet mackerel, setting its dorsal fin on fire. This was taken incorrectly by Emily Church as the signal to launch the Sean Bean Underwater Safari Hot Air Balloon, in the basket of which Laura Kovanicki was taking five for being snippy with a sea cucumber. The balloon rose directly into the humped belly of a humpback whale, knocking its tea lights off and into Sam and Chloe Baldrecki's collection of antique, non-corrodable anti-poacher flame ball trebuchets. A volley of fiery cannonballs was loosed and mistaken for self-igniting trout by Hazel Bond, who rendered them in oils and submitted the painting to unorthodox_investigators Flaming Safari Watercolours Challenge. Hazel was awarded a special commendation which was withdrawn for painting in portrait not landscape by adjudicator Jim O'Brien, who himself was sanctioned for incorrect reason given for a painting competition sanction. O'Brien left in tears in the talons of a cormorant who dived in for a sardine but accidentally snagged Andrew, just at the point he was about to warn Eivind of an approaching bottle rocket dolphin. Eivind was knocked into Oscar Gaynor's 24-foot underwater safari telescope, which rolled onto Mariska Beekman's buoyancy compensator, causing Mariska to sink into BGB's petroleum jelly-lined ferro rod, which sparked off the gas-powered padlock on James Booth's Flaming Piranha Zoo, leading to a catastrophic Flaming Piranha stampede, which brought the evening to a haunting close. Thanks all.
Okay, that's the podcast. We're going to play out with the version of our theme tune sent in by Mary Ellen.
Thank you, Mary Ellen.
Thanks, Mary Ellen.
They live on a small island off the west coast of Canada.
Ooh,
and right, nice. I loved the French version of the email theme from last week's show, and it also made me feel weirdly competitive. So despite not knowing Portuguese, I have attempted a Brazilian version of the main podcast theme.
Brilliant. Wow.
Nice.
Lush.
Quite an odd choice, but let's see how that shakes out.
Lovely. Thank you, Marianne. Brilliant.
Yeah, and thank you all for listening.
Yes, thank
see you.
See
you next time.
Bye.
Thank you very much. Goodbye.